Welcome to Built Different, a podcast by boots-on-the-ground workers who are built different and like to get site done.
We're here to listen, question the status quo, and continue to find better ways to build the world. Welcome back to another week of the Built Different podcast. I'm Matt Daly, and I am joined by my esteemed colleague, Mr. Chris Jervy. I got there this time, esteemed colleague.
It's taken me a few weeks to get there, but I'm pleased to be here. Thank you.
We're in week three here, and you've already reached esteemed colleague status. We are also joined by co-founder and CEO of New Metrics, formerly SmartFit.io, Josh Kanner. Say hi, Josh.
Hey, great to be here, guys. Thanks for letting me join such esteemed company.
Yeah.
Great to have you.
We think very highly of ourselves, obviously. Or I just think highly of Chris. It's one of those things. I don't know.
If we don't esteem ourselves, who will? You know?
Agreed. I learned that early in my career. If you can't say good things about yourself, no one will.
It's a good life lesson.
Yes, sir.
Excellent. Well, yeah, look, Josh, so we're gonna get into a couple things today, right? We're gonna hear a little bit about your background, your journey into where you are today. We're going to talk a little bit about New Metrics. Like, maybe there's some folks out there who have not heard of you guys, or maybe you haven't taken a look in a while. And we're going to kind of dive into like AI for safety, kind of where are we today? Where are we headed? A little bit of an overview of how our actually two companies work together. That might be interesting for some folks. And then, yeah, we'll kind of wrap up with a little bit about sort of, this is the Built Different podcast. What's new and unique and different about what you guys are doing in New Metrics? I think there's a lot of stuff to share there. So Chris, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt. So Josh, like, I think one of the things that's most fun about this podcast for us is to really kind of dive back a little while, kind of get to the source of your journey into AEC and the Contech. I know your journey is a little different than your sort of standard, there's nobody standard in this industry, but the project managers or VDC folks that we have spoken with, this has been more of a business journey for you. I want to go all the way back. We're both from Massachusetts. I'm from suburban Boston. You're from apparently way out in the West. Take us back to early days in Western, in the Berkshires with you. Did you have any inclination you'd end up in sort of the AEC world, or was that something you came to later? Walk us through your time there.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, early days out in Western Mass, I grew up in the Berkshires in a city called Pittsfield, which was a great place to grow up. We have some famous people from Pittsfield, actually. Got here in the Boston area, a couple founders of some software companies, Wayfair and some others. And then the actress, what's her name? She's the blonde woman who's in that Mockingjay.
Jennifer Lawrence.
No, the other one.
The other one. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, it'll come to me later.
So you have a long lineage of famous. You're just basically adding to a long lineage of famous.
I don't even. Yeah, I'm not even in that category. No, definitely not. No.
You are for us.
We have to get the pool small enough and then we can all be famous. Yeah, so the whole journey to Contech started actually with beer. It was all over beer here in Boston, actually.
How appropriate.
Yeah.
Where? What was the, do you remember the bar?
In Davis. Yeah. Davis Square. The bar is called The Burren. And I was meeting with a friend of a friend. His name's Adam Omansky. And he was 10 years into a construction career. He was an owner's rep who had just finished building a hotel over in Budapest for the Four Seasons and was taking some classes here in Boston. We had a beer and he said, you know, it's kind of crazy. I spent $50,000 on software for my office in Budapest to build this hotel. But when I went out into the field, all I had was a notebook and a pencil. I had my waterproof field notebook and a pencil or pen. So we got to talking. I'd been doing software for about 5 years, enterprise software. We got to talking about, well, what kind of product could you build that could help address all the challenges that he had as an owner's rep overseeing construction? And, you know, at peak, they had like 400 Hungarian day laborers that were working on site, and they had to deliver a Four Seasons hotel level of quality. So, you know, super A, class A above quality, but with field workers who, for Christmas, this is no joke, for Christmas, they gave gloves to everybody as gifts. Like, it was, so that whole, like, just like the just the disconnect between what you're trying to deliver and what you may be able to deliver given the teams on site was really, really obvious. And so that was back actually in 2004, like around Thanksgiving. And that started things rolling. That conversation became the kernel of the idea that then became mobile first quality safety and document management platform for construction built on tablet PCs in 2005, which is what Vela Systems became. So it all ultimately, Chris, like I think many good inventions, it started with beer.
My entire careers have been launched at bars. I totally agree. In fact, most of my great work, as I've said many times in my life, that most of my great work is done over beer.
Totally.
Yeah, yep. That's awesome. So that conversation, I mean, you're talking about somebody that was working abroad, but you knew that there was some applicability or whatever the right word is here in the States. I mean, it was clear to you that there was something that was missing everywhere.
Well, it started a whole process of going out and building prototypes of products and showing it to contractors here in the Boston area and getting a lot of feedback and building stuff that you could basically pretend that it worked before we actually made it work so that we could get field feedback. And the original idea for Vela Systems was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. It was that we would use RFID tags instead of painter's tape to mark up the interiors. It was all about basically the final steps of Punch. It wasn't even about earlier on in Punch, but that you would use RFID and walk in the room and the tablet would wake up and tell you where all the problems were and what they were. And we wound up showing that idea to a bunch of folks. And I'll never forget, it was the president of one contractor here in the Boston area. He said, "That looks to me like you're using a sledgehammer." I don't know why I'm doing this accent. It was a Boston guy. But he's like, "It looks to me like you're using a sledgehammer to kill a mosquito." And so what we wound up doing is we wound up like drastically scaling it back and just building a really simple, easy to use quality management system and punch listing system. And that's what got us off the ground.
You didn't go the other direction by trying to convince him that it was a very large mosquito?
Yeah. We're like, "Well, you could kill the mosquito with the RFID tag." He was not convinced.
I think that's like a really common, I've heard a few different variations of that from other founders as well, who maybe started with a more complex hardware to software integration and had this like version 10 end in mind thing they were trying to build. And then they built it and then they put it in front of people. And certainly in the construction industry, we're at stage two of digitization, maybe. People were like,
"Yeah, I mean, what we realized, Matt, and sorry to interrupt, but in like,
it's way too much."
In 2005, we realized like the biggest thing was actually getting plans into people's hands and being able to mark them up. Like, I still have an example of one of the original Vela tags, which had RFID in it, so that, you know, I don't forget about over engineering or going too far ahead of, you know, where the real value is.
Shout out to the Rumbix team, actually, because I remember a very like, they started with GPS breadcrumbs, I think. I'm probably going to not tell this story correctly, but that was where they started. And then they, just like you, they had to dial back to like, can we just do a very simple thing in the cloud, make it available on mobile and get adoption? And I feel like a lot of founders listen, or hopefully some founders listen to this. And actually, I think, you know, your journey is a particularly interesting one because of the stuff you've learned along the way.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting nuggets in there, Josh. Like, I think back, you know, I wasn't here at StructionSite, but we know that there were a few folks early on that got it, right? They just fundamentally understood it and really were the ones that were integral to sort of testing, refining, getting it to where it was supposed to be from that initial concept to that really that sort of product market fit place. Can you just dive into that a little bit more? I'd love to learn more about kind of who and what were some of the learnings early on that helped you get from sledgehammer to fly swatter or citronella candle?
Fly net, catching net. Yeah. So the lessons are, you know, they won't be a surprise to anybody. I think that the challenge, other than construction, I think is it doesn't really lend itself very well to a lot of what you would think of as lean startup principles, which are like, go out, get data and try and if you get a lot of negative feedback, then pivot and go away. It took us 80 sales calls to get our first. So there's a few big jumps, Chris, as you and Matt know, right? There's people saying, yeah, that's a good idea. And then the next big jump is you have something and then people actually paying you money. That's a really big jump between the two. And so we got the cannon to fly swatter, or sledgehammer to fly swatter was getting to what the idea is, but then getting someone to actually pay is another big jump. So it took us 80 sales calls to get to that first paying customer and that was with a prototype product. And I think if in a lean startup world, you probably would have run away by 40, you know, like, okay, this is a big enough sample, or 30 or maybe 10, but there are certain ideas that just make sense. And certain industries that are, because of the dynamics in construction, which now is my industry. I've been in this industry for now 18 years. We're in this industry. We are just working really hard to deliver. Basically, when you're working on a project, you just don't have, you don't have a lot of time to look at new stuff. And it's hard. It's hard to change the way you're delivering a job in the middle. So you really, I think one of the key lessons, Chris, back to your original question, is you really have to be stubborn and keep pushing and stick to it. And then partner really closely with the early adopter customers.
Yeah.
For us at Vela Systems, there was a project manager in Miami who was, still is, brilliant guy, just, you know, electrical engineer, but just ran the job himself, basically stem to stern, as an owner's rep / GC. It was kind of a weird hybrid role. They actually developed the jobs and built them. And he saw it. He was like our first customer at Vela in 2005. And we basically partnered together to build a product that worked for him, including push pins on top of 2D plans in 2005 and having those be dynamic and tie back to trades and issue statuses and stuff like that, which is now...
Those push pins were big.
That's now the way everybody works, right? So anyway, long answer to your question, but yeah, you got to be stubborn and just blast your way through ultimately.
Kind of going back, I mean, 2004, 2005, that was also like pretty early on in some real technological change in the industry. I mean, I feel like, you know, being at Bluebeam beforehand, it had started in 2010. I got there in 2002. It started in 2010. We really hadn't broken even into the construction segment at all. That was more of a design tool still. And it was hard to get real penetration into the construction industry. 04, 05 is really early. What do you think were some of the, other than being incredibly persistent and really like following the lead of those early adopters, what were some of the, maybe some of the market forces or some of the other things that were happening that kind of, I think, maybe led you to find some additional success? You think it was just a matter of time till the industry turned over? Or were there other things that were kind of influencing at that time, pre-iPad, some of the stuff that really, really escalated? You know, what were some wins there for you guys?
Well, I think what was really key for us was the total pain and cost of the punch list and quality closeout process. Without technology, it was completely broken. And one of our early contractors up here in Boston, Tachi, the CEO of Tachi, told me a story of where they basically, so there's basically the concept, I mean, you guys are familiar with the concept of retainage. I mean, they had basically, like, I think it was 2.5% of the job was tied up in retainage at the end. And they freaking couldn't get it because they had lost track of two punch list items. And one of them was like the gate on the garage that wasn't working. And the owner wouldn't release the final payment, which was a lot of the profit of the job.
Yeah.
And so the CEO was like, I freaking got on the phone and I just had someone go fix the gate who I knew. We just did it. So there was this massive disconnect between the cost, the time, and even though the underlying technologies, Chris, really sucked back then, pardon my French, it was like tablet PCs and stuff, which cost $4,000 and the batteries lasted for 2 hours and they were super heavy. And the pain of, let's say, closing out, not a parking garage, but a 46-story high-rise, high-end condo in Miami, which was some of our bread and butter early projects, like they needed to turn those over. It made it worth it. And then what unlocked things was 2009, 2010, when the iPhone and the iPad were released. And all of a sudden, the hardware was light enough, had long enough battery life, and was actually user-friendly enough, and you could get software on it through the App Store. That really unlocked a lot of potential in our industry and began the next wave of growth.
Yep. Yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, it sounds like that really it was a mosquito and you didn't need a sledgehammer, right? You really just needed to find that one pain point, that one workflow that was just driving people. And it was a big pain point, right? 2.5% is a huge amount of money on those projects. If you just find the right pain point, that one thing, and do it really well. I think we've seen a lot of that with niche or technologies that are really focused on trying to do one thing really, really well.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a lot that ties from it. Punch list is just the beginning. If you start and then you start working backwards, you realize that it's a classic 25 cents of every dollar in construction is spent on rework, you know? So that's a quality management problem. And if you're thinking about punch listing, you should be thinking about quality management earlier, because there's really punch listing at every phase of the job. So anyway, it began a long journey, a very positive journey around change and ultimately bringing workflow, but also digitization of what's happening in the field in construction across all the key risk areas, from safety, from quality to safety, to ultimately to cost and schedule. Although that's a whole nother podcast, like schedule, each of those has its own, as you guys know well, has its own challenges.
We'll bring you back for our 100th anniversary special to talk.
Sounds
about
great. That. Yeah, I'm honored. This is what, week three,
episode,
week four?
Episode 1000.
I appreciate it.
Let's switch gears to new metrics a little bit though, because that was like, you know, Vela Systems, kind of how you got started. Now, I'd love to hear like what are you guys up to at New Metrics? What are you solving for your customers? But also I think it would be great for folks to hear, like, as a founder or early employee at a company like this, I'd love to hear like what are some of those, you know, you're always having one of those conversations that just gives you energy because somebody, the light bulb goes off for somebody and they get it. I'd love to hear some of those, like an early story from you for when you were sort of, you know, early on building New Metrics and one of those conversations that you can just remember because it was kind of formative in how you think about building the business.
Yeah. So the story of New Metrics ties back directly to Vela Systems and basically the trends across our industry over the last 15 years of just increasing amounts of digital data. So coming from the field, whether it's entered by people or it's being captured passively, there's more data now than ever before. So when we got started, this is back now in 2015, 2016 is when I started SmartVid, which is now New Metrics. I was talking to a bunch of some of the old Vela Systems customers, talking to field superintendents, talking to CIOs, and everybody was talking about how they were generating more data than ever before. And then in particular, photo and video content was just blowing up, right? So there's so much, and so how do you handle it? So we started out with the concept that, all right, so where Vela wound up is we were building into the roots of Vela Systems. We were building in analytics and the ability to understand not just where you were as a customer in terms of quality and safety and closeout, but how you stood up next to your peers. And to do that, you have to build in a bunch of stuff in your data model, like what kind of project is it? You got to understand how large it is. There's a whole bunch of pieces. As we started building SmartVid, the question was, all right, well, how can you help manage all that data and continue with this trend of what we see and what everybody is talking about now, which is how do you get to better analytics for benchmarking and also predicting outcomes on jobs? Because if you've got data, project is a system, right? If you've got information about it at every phase, whether it's structured data or unstructured data like imagery, you can understand where that job is and help better manage it. So light bulb going off story was working with customers like Shawmut, where I talked to the head of safety there and Sean Carvalho, we'd talk about, well, how do I know which jobs, we have to figure out which jobs we want to focus on every week. And there's certain sort of rules of thumb that we use as safety professionals. Like we know which jobs are the biggest and we kind of know which trades we've got issues with. And maybe we know the weather and where there are going to be wind events. And there's a lot of stuff to keep in mind. But what if the data that everybody's gathering already, whether it's through systems like StructionSight or in construction management systems, what if that data could also help inform our decisions about where we should focus our attention? So that was one aha moment. And that tied into what we were building, which was AI to understand what's in that data. So to be able to identify trends around risk, like, is this job have a lot of work at height going on? Is there a lot of housekeeping issues seen? Those kinds of things. That was a big one aha moment. The other big aha moment was with our customer with Suffolk and talking with their chief data officer, Jikki Chen. And this was about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, where she came from another industry. She was a consultant doing data consulting in the more the industrial world. And she came into construction and she joined Suffolk, and we'd been working with them for a few years. And she said, this is great that you guys can identify risk, but what would be really great, it's kind of like, you know what's cool? $1 million. You know what's really cool? $1 billion. But you know, she's like, what would be really good is if you could not just look and know what's going on today, but you could use that data to predict what's going to happen. Because, you know, Josh, in other industries, they're predicting risk. They're not just reacting to it. And so we partnered with Suffolk, and they gave us 10 years of their outcome data, all the incidents that had happened over 10 years, plus all of the underlying other data from photos to safety observations to manpower logs. And we built, this is what became the first step of us changing from SmartVid, which was really focused just on pictures, to NewMetrics, which acknowledges that photos are just one piece of the overall risk equation. It's an important one, don't get me wrong. And if you have photos, like from systems like StructionSight, it improves the accuracy of your predictions by 25% or more, which is awesome. But it's one piece of the overall puzzle. And that if you can solve that puzzle, you know, it goes back to Sean's original question, how do I know where to send my guys so that I can minimize the safety risk on my jobs? We can solve that now, looking at photos, manpower data, observation data, and incident data. Based on just rewinding, Suffolk gave us 10 years of incident data. We now have 15 centuries, 1,500 years
wow.
of outcome data that we have related back to all those inputs to create, here's the name, NewMetrics, about how you can manage and better manage risk and better understand where you need to go.
I would have expected Chris to do a dad joke right there, but yeah, you just nailed it for
him. He said the name. Isn't that from Family Guy? Or maybe he said the name of the movie.
I'm just trying to think of like, don't build during the plague. I mean, that's a pretty long time ago, dude. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. 15 centuries of construction data. That's pretty wild, man.
15 centuries. Yeah, it is kind of interesting when you think about it. Yeah, it was 722. Yeah.
That's the dark ages.
Yeah, yeah, it was. It was.
So how have you been able to incorporate that? Because that's a lot of data to go through. Like, I'd love to know kind of how you figure out what's really valuable and what's not really valuable to try to like integrate into the product. Because again, like, there's got to be some stuff in there that isn't useful.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I think there's a whole bunch of ways to look at it, Chris. Just to take one example, the 15 centuries are of outcomes. And what does an outcome mean? It's an incident. It could be a recordable, or it could be along a whole spectrum of things. It could be a near miss. It could be property damage. It could be a whole bunch of things that ultimately would result in either a loss or some kind of claim that will tie back to either your general liability or your workers' comp on the project. So the first part, Chris, is understanding, all right, of these outcomes, what are they? And we've wound up building as a part of that process, we've had to, of understanding the data, we had to build something we call an incident severity score, where we look from basically given the outcome, what is its severity? And then each of those incident severity scores feeds into the model. And we actually know, it's kind of interesting, we know from looking at a company's data, what and how much incident data they're gathering along that spectrum of scores and what the right level is. Because if you're only gathering recordables, that's not good. Like, you need a much broader spectrum. If you're only recording on the other end of the, if 95% of what you're putting into your observation system is, yeah, everything's great, it's all positive, also not good. There's what we found is that there's somewhere in the middle. Contact us for benchmarking. There's some good happy medium there that helps you understand what the right level of risk is.
What's the next step for you guys? How do you continue to grow into NewMetrics?
Yeah, so it's more and more newer and newer metrics, I guess I would say. No,
you heard it here first. More and newer metrics. That's the third iteration, newer metrics.
Newer, yes, that'll be our next rebrand. Partners are really important to us. So working with you guys, you know, it's been great to deepen our integration to include video walk support over the last 6 months. That we're seeing that with our customers. Like, we see a really nice evolution where we work with Struction Site customers, and their video walk data, their other photo capture data gets funneled into the New Metrics platform as a source of, as an input to predictive models, and as a way to help enable more data really about safety that can then help guide decision making. That's a key theme for us, Chris, and we're excited to partner with you guys and keep pushing that partnership forward.
Yeah, we think a lot about what is site documentation. How do you actually holistically document a job site in order to actually capture all the information that you're looking to capture to ultimately analyze whatever you want to analyze? You know, we're an interior land-based mobile capture application, but there's drone capture, there's fixed, there's, you know, site cameras, et cetera. What are the other inputs that, other than those kinds of things, like, are there other types of data that you think are highest priority to help you guys kind of refine the model?
Yeah, the data we use, Chris, is at the highest level, it's what are the outcomes? So incidents of various types, but then what are the inputs? What goes into the basically running a job every day? So manpower data and payroll data based on who's on site. And we don't care what you're charging or what you're billing. We're not interested in, you know, we don't need cost data. We want to know who's on site and, for example, what their role is. An example of one metric we've seen we'd be predictive of safety risk is, for example, the foreman to apprentice ratio, which makes sense intuitively. And that's like one of 200 different metrics that we look at that then feed into the model. So photo data combined with who's on site, what are they working on? So how many activities are going on? Trade stacking is another critical thing. There's actually a number. As soon as you get over a certain number of trades working either at the same time or on top of each other. Again, none of this is rocket science, but it pops out of the data. And if we're managing 200 of these at once, it winds up being more than any one person can handle.
You mentioned weather. I assume like environmental conditions is a big part of it. For those of us that have built in New England and there are some slippery ladders and things out there, I assume, you know, those conditions are an important input as well.
Yep. Yeah. So forward-looking forecasts feed into the models. Yeah. We were doing, as a part of a go live to the enterprise safety team of one of our customers, that jumped out to one of the regional safety managers. He was like, holy cow, you're like every Monday morning, you're going to tell me which of my jobs have high wind or high temperature alerts. I don't have to go and look up the weather for every project. That's a win right there. That's where you start seeing back to you, the light bulb going off.
Josh, you guys have evolved a lot as a business since you first started. One of the things I definitely wanted to touch on here is what are some of the most common misconceptions about what you guys are doing related to safety, AI, sort of anything along those lines?
Yeah. So even though we rebranded and changed our name and have done a lot to try and reinforce the message that we're no longer just looking at pictures, I think people, when they find out we're, you know, oh, you used to be SmartVid, they think, oh, we know what they are. It's just photo analytics. That's totally not what we are anymore. Those people need to look at us again. So, because what we saw is that photo analytics, our ultimate goal here is reducing safety risk. Photo analytics is a great part of that. It's an important part of that, but it's not the only part. And so we've learned that that's where our focus on predictive and our ability to pull in data from multiple systems has been really helpful. And then the future is, you know, from safety to other areas and beyond. Project delivery risk has a whole bunch of areas, not just safety.
Yeah, I mean, project delivery risk, that kind of feels like another one of those. We hear people talk about how tracking productivity is the holy grail. Overall project risk seems like another sort of holy grail type situation where if you can figure that out, you've solved a really, really sticky, difficult problem for the industry.
Yeah. Yeah, imagine what you could do with 15 centuries of project outcomes, project budget outcomes, or cost outcomes.
Like back when you actually did kill mosquitoes with sledgehammers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was the only tool.
You hit them with the side of a bear skin, yeah.
I remember, to your point about SmartVid, yeah, I remember in the early days, there was even like a ENR top 10 contractor that was like, oh, well, we just did an enterprise agreement with New Metrics. So I guess project teams were all of a sudden like confused about what to do. And like, yeah, just like to clear these are two very different systems now that are sort of serving different purposes for the business. So we've kind of grown apart in some ways, but also like bridging that gap with an integration to make sure that the data is flowing where everybody wants it to flow, I think is really, really important. Let's jump to New Metrics. You've built this business. This is your second, is that right? Your sort of second contech startup that you've started. We'd love to, you know, share with the folks here what are some of the things that make you guys different, right? As I said earlier, this is the Built Different podcast. Let's dive into, you know, what's special and different about NewMetrics and kind of how are you guys tackling things in a way that isn't being served today?
Yeah, we're going in with the approach that we want to use data that you're already gathering, as opposed to saying we want to rip out what you're doing and do it a new way. And that has pros and cons. But on the positive side, we know that there's a lot of apps out there and really great ones for different use cases, like Struction Site, obviously. And that, I think that what makes us different is we're part of a generation of software companies that you do see in other industries. There's one, for example, called Clary that plugs into Salesforce and gives you analytics out of Salesforce. We are like that for construction risk management, where what makes us different is we want to help you. We want to augment, improve what you're doing by tapping into, I'm doing this with my hand because we're like tapping into your data to merge it with all the 15 centuries we have and use it to help you get better insights. I think that's very different. People don't understand that. They say like, oh, I gotta use another app. I gotta do it. No. You can literally turn it on, like Warfel turned it on over a weekend, and on Monday they were generating data for 42 different projects.
That's amazing.
Yeah, That's fantastic. That's really cool. You were just tapping into someone's brain right there is what you were actually doing.
Yeah. I was trying to get Chris. He's sort of to my left here.
It's kind of a claw. I felt it though. It felt like a clamp thing.
Isn't that the joke though? What is this? It's a brain sucking spider. What is it? What's it doing? It's starving. You know, I think my son told me that
Ouch. Yeah, this is exactly what we want to end up. We want to end up in points like this in our podcast for sure.
Yeah.
This is how we wrap things up around here.
Yeah, with that shirt, Chris, I had to make fun of you a little bit.
Yeah,
it's brain. Although it's nice. I like the logo. It's on the sweet logo.
Yeah. Like I said, I thought, so I'm going to do it outside. I might as well, you know, go full tropical out here. Try to enjoy the summer while we got it.
Looks nice.
Chris, anything else on your mind that you want to try to tap into before we?
Oh man, about 1,000 things, but I think we're like already 40 minutes into this thing, so I think we got to wrap it up. But no, we'll have to have you back on our one of our anniversary specials, Josh. There's so much more that I'd like to uncover here. Really, just like so many lessons learned, I'm sure. You know, being able to have a couple of successful ventures out there, doing something right. So congrats on all the success, and we continue to look forward to just having a really strong partnership with you guys. We're big on the idea of data flows, of trying to figure out ways that we can enable data, facilitate data flow without having people doing too many new random things. If we can kind of work within those existing workflows to just provide better insights, that's a win for the industry for sure. So excited to hear where you guys are headed with that. And thanks again for your time joining us here today.
Yeah.
Whatever pleasure. Time it is.
Wherever you are.
Yeah. Wherever we are.
Yeah, it's been great working with you guys.
Yeah, it's sunny Southern California for this guy. But yeah, Josh, really appreciate you spending some time with us here, man. It's always fun to chat. Always good to hear the stories. And look forward to talking to you again soon. And that'll be a wrap for us this week on the Built Different podcast. We will see you guys soon.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, guys.
Built Different is brought to you by Struction Site. To find out more about us, head to structionsite.com.
Make sure to search for Built Different in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. Click follow so you don't miss out on any future episodes.
On behalf of everyone here at Struction Site, thanks for listening.